In Living with Princes by Stephen Wakelam, Michel de Montaigne was played by Roger Allam, Pellier by James Norton, and Catherine de Medici by Jane Lapater. Henri Navarre was played by Elliot Levy, Henri Valois by Sam Dale, Françoise de Montaigne by Sally Orrock, and Marie de Gournay by Leah Brotherhead. Sergeant Soumillon was Adil Akhtar, Captain Guillon Lloyd Thomas, and the courtier Henry Devas. The director was Jeremy Mortimer, and the play was first broadcast on Radio 3 in January last year. Next week, the tale of the lost Salford Sioux, a play by Anjum Malik, drama on 3 at 8:30 next Sunday evening. Now on BBC Radio 3, it's time for World Roots with Lucy Duran.
On today's programme, we'll hear a report by American writer Banning Air about the lively music scene he encountered on a recent visit to Egypt. Plus, there will be a review of the latest CDs of world music. First, though, one of the world's oldest and most stunning polyphonic vocal traditions comes from Georgia, in the heart of the Caucasus, Europe's highest mountain range. And here in the World Roots studio is a choir of 12 men who are from Tbilisi, capital of Georgia. They take their name from an old Georgian word that means sweet music. This is Ensemble Sakhioba. The extraordinary polyphony of Georgia, and that was a church piece about the biblical fiery furnace sung by the Sakhioba Ensemble, who've been visiting the UK as part of a tour. And later on, they'll be back in the World Roots studio to sing some of Georgia's rich repertoire of folk songs. But first, we're going to have a listen to some new albums of world music in the company of music writer and iMagazine editor John L. Walters and music editor of the Metro newspaper, Arwa Haydar. So, Arwa, tell us about this first album that you brought along, Biology.
Right. Biology. We're going to start off with Kinshasa Succursale, which is the new album by Biology, the Belgian rapper, and he draws on his Congolese roots for this album. Biology's name apparently means sorcerer in Swahili, and there is an enchanting kind of blend of perspectives and styles and voices on this album. We're going to start with the opening number on the album, which is called Le Jour d'Après. And it reworks a track from 1960 called L'Indépendance, Chacha, which was originally by Joseph Cabasele. And he also redresses the kind of optimistic ideals of this great rousing anthem and adds a shaking of healthy cynicism to this lovely lilting Afro-Latin tune.
Le jour d'après, premier juillet. J'ai arrêté. Indépendance, cha cha, faut s'oublier. Indépendance, cha cha, ça y est, mais c'est maman. Ça, et mais c'est maman. La multitude d'origine, autant d'ethnies que de coutumes, n'empêche le partage d'aspirations communes. C'est
indépendance, cha-cha,
indépendance.
Faut s'oublier.
Indépendance, cha-cha, les jours d'après.
Le jour d'après.
Indépendance, cha-cha,
tout bas qui dit.
Taï et Moja, je l'ai.
Faut s'oublier. Indépendance, cha-cha.
Entre clair-obscur et ténèbres, 50 ans, ça se célèbre. Promesse le lendemain, promesse de l'aube d'un état souverain où le sol se dérobe entre milices et rebelles, pillages et recels, peuple que l'on déplace comme des cheptels, de parcelle en parcelle, gouvernance en tutelle, état de droit essentiel. À nos ethnies unies au pluriel, effet papillon, effet tampon, car ici on change leur en blanc. La révolution au bout du vote, la force du nombre est l'antidote pour changer la dette en dot. Autant de droits que de devoirs, plus de points de convergence que de différences, et oublier l'état-providence. Cette chanson fédératrice, symbole de la crédulité des prémices, entre indépendance et armistice. Mais pour que nos démocraties progressent, faut qu'elles apprennent de leurs erreurs de jeunesse. Mon pays est un continent émergent, bâti en moins de 50 ans.
Well, that's the opening track of the new album by Congolese and Belgian singer Balogi from his album Kinshasa Succursale. And that track is called Le Jour d'Après, and it's a reworking of, I think, one of Africa's most famous popular tunes, Indépendance, Cha-Cha, that dates back to 1960 when Congo got its independence. So is this a track that you were both very familiar with in its original version? John?
Well, I don't know it well, but it's a familiar tune. It's a lovely tune and feel. And in fact, the album does draw on quite a lot of quite disparate songs and tunes and feels. But it's a kind of hip-hop, an African hip-hop album, where Balogi has a license to take from wherever he wants to and turn it into his own music. And I must say, I didn't warm to the album, having sort of read the articles and heard the buzz. I don't have a great fondness for records that have lots of spoken word on them. And I find the spoken word outweighs the music.
That's funny coming from you, John, because you obviously...
That wrote that later.
Well, and obviously the written word is very,
so, yeah.
very much... Oh, really?
So, but Arwa, you chose this album, you chose Baloji.
Right. What I really liked about the album was how many contentious veins there are on it. It seems to have inspired quite a lot of debate. Baloji, by his own admission, is rediscovering things about his music's heritage that as a youth he wasn't interested in and that he kind of rejected. And there are also personal stories on this album as well.
Because he goes back and finds his mother, doesn't he, in Lubumbashi in the southeast of DR Congo. What's the story with Baloji?
Well, there's an extraordinary personal story behind this, which is what makes it very interesting, actually, just as a project, that he left Africa at the age of three, grew up in Belgium, and then was only really reconnected with his mother, I think, 20 years later?
About 25 years, yeah. Yes. A whole lifetime, really.
So. And the other, just musically, I was fascinated to see that he cites the Beatles' White Album as an influence, which, in a way, does connect with what I was saying in a negative way, which is actually every track sounds different.
For me, it works very well. I mean, what also works really well, but won't be to all tastes, is that there's a few remixes that tail end the album.
Including the track that we've just heard, Anna
Bonnance
Cha-Cha. That's
right, yeah. So for me, it's an album that works on lots of different levels. And if that provokes debate and argument, that's no bad thing. That makes it that makes it much more interesting and entertaining.
So, John, are you basically saying that hip-hop is not your favourite idiom?
In a matter of words, yes. It's a discussion I've been having with a few friends lately because
shall
I found a lot of people...
Shall we sing for the rest of the time now around this table?
I was thinking it's a little bit like in graphic design, you get posters that are entirely made of type, using type as image, which I personally love, but I know people who just can't actually take that, particularly if it's not in a language they understand. You know, why would you want to look at a lot of type when you could look at a beautiful figure or a landscape? And I was just beginning to wonder whether there's something musically happening that's similar to that.
I think typography is beautiful and I think hip-hop's fabulous.
Well, Baloji's new album, Kinshasa Succursale, has just been released here in the UK on the Belgian label Crammed Discs. So, from a Congolese musician who lives in Belgium, we move to a Lebanese musician who's based in France, Ibrahim Malouf. John, this is your choice.
Yes, this is an album, the third album in a series of three, apparently, by Ibrahim Malouf, who plays four-valve trumpet, and it's a predominantly instrumental album. He's a new artist to me, but I got very excited to hear it, and this is one of the most explosive tracks called Mava in the Wonderland. Thank you.
The Lebanese trumpeter Ibrahim Malouf with his track Mava in the Wonderland from his album Diagnostic. And Mava is apparently his sister. Every track on the album is dedicated to some member of his family.
It's an extraordinary journey, isn't it? He kind of throws everything into this record, including the kitchen sink, and it doesn't always quite wash, but I think it's a very exuberant and enjoyable album. There's a lot of piano playing, because he plays piano as well as trumpet, and in fact plays a lot of the percussion and marimba, all kinds of stuff on this.
Because it's a family thing, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's nice that he's dedicated every track on this album to his immediate family, including his young daughter. But the Malouf family are something of an artistic dynasty in the Middle East, both in terms of music, certainly, but also literature. I enjoyed this album overall, and that track, I think, was a really good example of this really well-rounded showmanship. There's a very filmic quality, a very filmic atmosphere to his work that I really like.
I think at its best, a film soundtrack is about drama and emotion, and there's plenty of that in here. And I think it's an interesting answer to the question of, you know, if you're a trumpet player, how do you make an album if you're not a jazz player? And, you know, he's not really a jazz musician, although it sounds like he could probably play jazz, but he's made much more of a much more eclectic album that it draws on the rye, the Afro-Cuban rhythms, on Led Zeppelin heavy metal type rhythms, on hip hop a little bit, there is a bit of bland new agey stuff at the end, which I think, you know, you can just sort of skip when you get to the final track. But I think overall it's a fine album, and I'm looking forward to hearing him play live.
Nevertheless, John, I think you chose the best track on the album. I think Mava, his sister Mava, gets the best deal on it. Well, that's Ibrahim Malouf's new album, Diagnostic, which is out on Harmonia Mundi. And we're going to hear more music from Lebanon, but from a new generation, well, even newer than Ibrahim Malouf, from the album Golden Beirut. Arwa, tell us about this album.
That's right. Golden Beirut is a compilation that purports, I guess, to offer a slice of young life or youth culture from the Lebanese capital. And it really is a mishmash of an album in terms of styles. You've got everything on here from electropop to dub to indie rock, and obviously things that draw on more traditional Arabic forms. I have to say, if Balaji sets your teeth on edge, you're going to find this quite challenging. But perhaps I approach this album quite subjectively. I'm always very interested in hearing contemporary Arabic music, and I think there were sparks on this album that were very promising. The track we're going to listen to is called Ahwak, and it's by a producer called Shifts with a young Lebanese vocalist called Hiba al-Mansouri. It's an interesting track because it reworks a pop hit from the 1950s, and its romantic yearning sentiments are very much in the tradition of Arabic pop. But there's a freshness too.
That was Shifts, also known as the producer Zaid Hamdan, and the singer was Hiba El Mansouri, and the track Ahwak from the compilation Golden Beirut. What did you say Ahwak means?
Ahwak essentially doesn't quite mean I love you. It's more like I fancy you. That's a lovely way of saying I fancy you.
I think that's a lovely track. I like it very much. Like a lot of the tracks on this compilation album, it's very kind of low-key production. It's all about how young musicians are recording these tracks in their studios at home and in their basement or whatever.
It does the job that I think these kind of compilations should do, which is to expose you to a lot of people you would never hear any other way. And it's a bit of a scattergun approach because, as Awa indicated, it goes from electropop to kind of, you know, sort of shoegazing indie type stuff. And there's a reference in the sleeve notes to the fact that a lot of these artists have to do very small underground gigs. Mm. They can make a limited edition CD that goes under the gaze of the censors, and they can get it out, and they might get played on an internet radio station, or they might get picked up by an international promoter and get an invitation somewhere else. So that's the kind of role of this. It's not to be a listen you can put on and eat a meal through.
I mean, you're right, it's a snapshot. I mean, if you were to present any city and say this is the sound of London, it's not going to work on a 12-track CD, obviously. But I mean, I think that there's such a paucity of contemporary Arabic music on this level that seems to be reaching mainstream here that I would welcome it. It's certainly not a consistent album, but if it's the beginning of something, then great. I think this year, where the Middle East has been so prominent in headlines, there's been a trickle rather than a flood of contemporary releases, and some of them have been very well-intentioned, including this one, but haven't summed up everything that's out there. Beirut is an incredibly cosmopolitan city, so, you know, there is a flourishing music scene there. If this means that, you know, we start to get more inroads, particularly with digital music, that's definitely to be welcomed.
Well, that compilation, Golden Beirut, is out on Out Here Records. And finally, another compilation and a rather different one. John.
This is one of 30, count them, tracks on the new World Roots double CD called On The Road. And these are all unreleased tracks, or previously unreleased on CD anyway, but things that World Roots listeners will have heard over the past 5 or 6 years. The track we're going to hear comes from Madagascar, and it's by Sambiasi and Samba, and the track's called Soloho Mahavelo.
Yeah.
two musicians from the southwest of Madagascar recorded on location in Toulea. That was Sam Biasi, who plays the marovan, the big box zither, and sings. And he was accompanied on shakers and second vocals by Samba. The track is Soloho Mahavelo. And if you're wondering why I know so much about it, it's because I was there while we recorded it, and it comes from the album World Roots on the Road. Thank you for selecting that track, John.
Well, this is a very rich and varied album, and it's so nice to hear such good field recordings. It's a very stimulating kind of trip around the world on two CDs. We actually end up back in Madagascar on the second CD with a different piece altogether. And the compilation is made very approachable by some very nice liner notes by James Parkin, or mainly by James Parkin, and some also equally entertaining recording notes by James Birtwistle. A lot of the notes go into some detail about the difficulties encountered in finding things, and there's a Brazilian track recorded in a cow shed surrounded by abandoned carnival floats, and that put a sort of unforgettable image in my mind while I was listening to the song.
Oh, absolutely. But as well as all those incredible stories, listening to the album, I really enjoyed how it flows and how it was sequenced. There's a real pleasure in kind of just naturally moving through, you know, a track from Azerbaijan into a track that was recorded in Jordan, into a track that was recorded, as you say, in Brazil. And, you know, music that sounds very resonant and very elegant without sort of fussy embellishment or overproduction, which you get
no
on
production.
Well,
no production.
But it's not at the same time it sounds elegant. It's not rough around the edges or, you know, it's interesting following the previous compilation that we've just listened to, which is really literally everything thrown at the wall.
But interestingly, it takes advantage of the same small-scale technology that we all have now, you know, sort of small battery-powered mixers and little microphones and computer mixing. And I think, and then, you know, the original records of the 50s, you know, great jazz and rock and roll records were often just recorded on a couple of mics, and, you know, if the mic's in the right place, it sounds good.
Well, that's the key thing, though, the mic being in the right place and just really meticulous attention to detail. And I like the fact that I came to this thinking, like, you know, where on earth do I start with this? It's literally all over the world. But then I kind of, like, started listening. It just made me think, great, where am I going to go next? That to me, made me realise how much it worked.
That's also a very curious thing, considering here we have something which is literally all over the world, and yet you hear things that everyone has in common, a sort of approach to melodies and rhythms and beautiful sounding instruments that actually speak right across all those cultural boundaries.
Well, World Roots on the Road is released this month on the Nascenti label. And John and Awa, you might be interested to know that next week on World Roots, there's the first of two special programmes from Madagascar. And I think we're going to be hearing in the second of those some more music from Sam Biasi. So thanks very much to both of you
for
coming in.
Thanks a lot.
And for full details of all the music on the programme, just go to the Radio 3 website and follow the links to World Roots. Well, if you're a regular World Roots listener, then the American broadcaster Banning Air will be a familiar voice to you. He's contributed to the programme over many years, and he's presented feature programmes from the USA and Argentina. Well, last year he spent several weeks in Egypt, gathering recordings for a series of programmes on his own show in the States. And for us, he reports now on how Egypt's music has been reflecting and indeed been part of the Arab Spring.
Over the past year, Cairo's Tahrir Square has become an icon of people's democracy for its massive public demonstrations. When I visited Egypt in mid-July for the music program Afropop Worldwide, I encountered street fair ambiance, speeches, musical performances, vendors and sightseers intermingling with committed protesters. At a moment of pause and reflection, Egyptians were wondering what sort of government their revolution will produce. Some also wondered how all this change will affect Egyptian music. After all, songs and singing were a major force in the Tahrir protests.
اخ
That's Rami Assam, the rough-hewn, Dylan-esque troubadour who rallied protesters with his songs last January. Assam also faced beatings and torture, but after Mubarak resigned, he wound up on stage at the Barbican Center in London. So might this be the face of Egypt's musical future? Maybe, but Egyptians have been raised on far more polished fare. Post-revolution Egyptian rock might sound more like popular Cairo bands Wust Al Balad and Cairo Key. The lead singers of those two bands, Hani Adel and Amir Eid, recorded this love song to freedom right around the time Mubarak resigned.
وبكرة واضح قدامنا من زمان بنستنى بندور مش لاقي مكاننا في كل شارع في بلادي صوت الحرية بينادي في كل شارع في بلادي صوت الحرية بينادي.
This song, Saut al Hurriya, or The Voice of Freedom, was a huge hit when it appeared, but its gushing optimism feels a little naive a year later. And if we're talking about the new sound of Egyptian pop, it doesn't sound very, well, Egyptian. In the heyday of 20th century Egyptian music, larger-than-life figures like Umm Kulthum and Abdel Halim Hafez created masterful fusions of Arab Egyptian music and Western ideas. Grammy Award-winning Egyptian composer and arranger Fatih Salama doesn't see anyone on the scene today capable of such universal appeal.
The maximum they do, in my opinion right now, one of the two. Either imitate the West, try to sing like the West and do like the West, or imitate the past and not as good.
Fatih Salama is not alone in taking a dim view of the Egyptian music scene. Many feel that 30 years of Hosni Mubarak has stifled creativity and innovation for a whole generation. Ask Salama where he does find any hope for the future, and surprisingly, he points to something as far from the elegant luminaries of Egypt's musical past as you can get. This is a DJ called Islam Chipsy playing at a Cairo street wedding. It's music that you will never hear on Egyptian radio or television, let alone see at any of the city's fine concert venues.
I think it's just guys from poor neighborhoods who also listen to DJs from the West, and they made their own version of, you can call it different names, but definitely there's nothing like it. Like they took the rhythm played by real drums or sampled or whatever. It is an Egyptian rhythm, finally. It's not a Western rhythm. And normally when you see this live, they have a drum set playing funny, actually. Sometimes you could say, what is this? Like you like or you don't like, but at least there's something new. Like he's playing the drums in his own way with the DJ. And with somebody like kind of emceeing, you know, on top and talking to the people and stuff. So I like this.
Mahmoud al-Husseini, a singer who has emerged from the street wedding scene to become a favorite of Cairo youth. But even one of Cairo's top concert presenters, Basma al-Husseini, has a passion for the edgy music these young artists are creating.
They all live in the poor areas around Cairo. They're kind of not educated. They're kind of ignored by the mainstream, of course. Even the mainstream underground, like the jazz club guys, and they don't recognize them as musicians, and they hardly play in well-known venues like our venue or any place like this. They play only in these neighborhoods. It's like a subculture kind of thing.
DJs with names like Figo, Beckham, and Haha circulate their music on homemade CDs or over the internet. This song by DJ Haha was a huge hit in Cairo last year. The refrain says, "I want to get married, but I can't get married, so why don't you leave me alone?"
It's the most exciting thing is happening in music in Egypt, if not in the Middle East, if not in pop music on any scale.
That's experimental composer and producer Mahmoud Refat, another serious musician with a soft spot for the street music of Cairo's poorest districts.
This is very original stuff. It has everything. It has the Egyptian culture. It has the aggression of hip-hop music. It has the dynamics of dance music. It has the concepts of radical music, repetition in beats and cutting and doing and looping. And it's a new form for me. It's not just shabby popular music.
One thing that's become clear from Egypt's recent election results is that religion, Islam, will play an important role in the country's political future. And the same could be true for music. Lately, young religious singers trained in Sufi celebrations are making their way into this brave new world of popular songs. One singer people are talking about is Mahmoud Elesi. He has no CDs, just two cassettes, but his name is sure getting around. The song has the rhythm and vocal characteristics of a Sufi saint celebration, a mulid, kind of cross between a carnival and a rave. But there's also a techno-pop feel that was never part of Sufi music until about the past 5 years. It's too soon to say whether an artist of Mahmoud Alesi's cut will become the next Egyptian superstar, like today's Amr Jab or Tamer Hosni. But whatever new sounds emerge in post-revolution Egypt, the world will be listening. Egypt once held the loudest musical voice in the Arab world, and that's another past glory it hopes to reclaim in an uncertain future.
That was Banning Air reporting on the music scene in Egypt. You're listening to World Roots on BBC Radio 3 with me, Lucy Duran. And as I said earlier on, for full details of all the music on the programme, just go to the Radio 3 website and follow the links to World Roots. Also on the website, you can find details of an event that's happening at the end of the month on the 27th of January. The event is here at Broadcasting House and will be announcing the names of this year's World Roots Academy protégé and mentor. There'll be performances from the two previous protégés, Khayyam Alami and Harry Sivanesan, and there are a limited number of free tickets available. You can apply online starting, well, right now. And you can phone the BBC Tickets Helpline number on 0370 901 1227. And I'm told that standard geographic rates apply. Mobiles may vary. Full details, as I say, are on the website. Well, now we're going to end today's programme as we began, with the music of Georgia. Here in session for World Roots is the Sakhioba Ensemble, And we're going to start with a solo song. Dato Jamrishvili accompanies himself on the panduri, the lute, in the song Jolata.
Jolata jolata varugunesta Bhagi sebedara gergeba Tsheta samashina swaja breda Hatalingebe Chev jor mashina za jovlada Kalaks gao tsvilit sam zeda Kakvirde kala kele vida Heta harari
That was a song called Jolata, and it was sung and played on the panduri by Dato Jamrishvili, who is one of the members of the Sakhioba ensemble. We'll be hearing them in full. But first of all, I'm joined around the table by two members of the ensemble who speak English. And one of them is Gheorghe Gwimradze, and the other one is Grigore Amiranashvili. I must say, Georgian is a very, very difficult language. But first of all, just tell me about this song that we've just heard, Jolata.
It's a kind of humoristic song, and it's about a mule.
About a mule?
Yes, a person who took his mule to the city, and all the people gathered around him, and everybody liked his mule. And even one merchant would like to buy this mule, but he was very fond of his mule, and he could not sell it. So, and this was the song's actually the lyrics, yeah. But the song is about maybe this centuries old, yeah. And it was the old Georgian instrument called panduri, which has its unique tune system, yeah.
It's a wooden lute, isn't it?
Yeah.
Panduri.
Yeah.
Tell us about this music, Grigore. There's something that is so special and unique about Georgian polyphony, about Georgian vocal music.
First of all, Georgia, it is a really small region and small area, and there is many different regions, mostly divided with two parts, East and West in Georgia, but there is also many places. All of them, they have their own musical tradition, and they have some main core, main Georgian polyphony core and melody system, but it's really many colored. And also old Georgian music has their own modal system and tune system. For example, you cannot play many songs on a piano. So this makes it unique, and it's really hard to perform exactly like it used to be. Nowadays, most ensembles, most choirs, they just sing these songs like you can play in piano, by notes. But in old time, it used to be by memorizing and by just listening and repeating this song. And our choir director, Malhazar Kwenze, was one of the first who started reviving this old tradition with old tune system and all this modal system of Georgian traditional music.
We're going to hear another piece now from the Sakhioba Ensemble, but it features four singers, and the name of the piece is, just tell me it.
Kis Simrera.
Which means what?
It's a kind of field work when you're going to gather the wheat, where the bread is coming from.
The wheat?
Wheat, yeah. And it's a process of gathering this wheat. And that's, that has a special temp, this song, to give the temp to the work.
It's a rhythmic song that gives rhythm to the work.
Yes, yes, exactly.
A work song from the eastern part of Georgia, sung here in the World Roots studio by members of the Sakhioba Ensemble. That song is really, it sounds very, very old. You say it's a work song, you say it's connected with working the fields, but I mean, how old would you say Georgian music is, Georgian folk music?
I think it's really hard to say exactly how old is it, but it's obvious that it came, some songs has really pagan roots, so it means like before Christianity came in Georgia and spread in Georgia. As we know, Christianity first came in Georgia in 1st century by Apostle Andrew, but the state religion, it became in a 4th century. And some songs has really pagan roots because they were some names of ancient gods and this kind of thing. But about this song, we cannot say exactly, but it's like maybe somewhere from Middle Ages.
How popular is this kind of music in Georgia?
You see, day by day, on an everyday basis, it's becoming more popular. And also the audience is starting to develop this taste regarding the traditional music. Yeah, because of their Georgians, they always appreciate it. But it doesn't mean that everyone listen it and everyone learn it.
For some people, for example, some teenagers, they might prefer like pop music or some modern music than listening old Georgian folk
but
music.
But they'll know
but
about
there is
it.
One, yeah, they definitely know, but they I don't think they everyone is listening and have recordings. But there is one thing that, for example, in 15 years ago, it was really few choirs. And nowadays, there is many choirs, and especially the member of these choirs and young people. So it means that it's getting more popular in the young generation.
So let us hear one more piece of music.
It will be the Naduri from Wani region. It is western part of Georgia, actually, especially the Imereti region. And this work is also the field working song. And in Georgia, there is a tradition to call the relatives and neighbors to help them when you have a big field to work. And during this field work, they always sing with the field working, yeah.
When World Roots went to Georgia, we went to the west, very near the Black Sea, yeah. And
yes.
They had a special vocal technique, which was using yodeling, a lot of yodeling.
Yes, Cream and Julie. We call it Cream and Julie, and you will listen to this Cream and Julie in this song. Yeah.
Great. Well, thank you so much for joining us here in the World Roots studio, and we're going to end with another work song from the fabulous polyphonic tradition from Georgia, and this is the Sakioba Ensemble.
Thank you for inviting us. And it's a big pleasure for us to be here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yo!
The Sahobia Ensemble ending World Roots, which was presented by Lucy Duran and produced by Roger Short. Now on Radio 3, Jazz Lineup with Claire Martin.
Herbie Hancock's Butterfly, and stay tuned to hear that tune reimagined by Swedish singer Victoria Tolstoy as part of tonight's special concert set recorded at the Isla Jazz Festival. And also in Victoria's repertoire, expect compositions by Esbjørn Svensson, Stevie Wonder, and a classic by Michael Jackson. Also on today's show, concert music from this artist. The singular lyrical sounds of saxophonist Gilad Atzmon and concert music from him and his Orient House Ensemble recorded at the 2011 Scarborough Jazz Festival later on in the programme. Well, first, let's get the swinging sounds of Pete Long's Gillespiana Orchestra to get our feet tapping. With solos from Simon Finch on trumpet and Alex Garnett on tenor sax, here's something from the definitive arranger-composer of the bop era, Tad Dameron, and it's Our Delight.
Thank you.
From the CD Gillespiana, that was Pete Long's Gillespiana Orchestra with Tad Dameron's Our Delight. And that was painstakingly transcribed for them by Alan Prosser, who deserves a full mention, alongside Pete Long's enterprising idea of putting together some of the finest musicians in the country to tackle that music. And the CD is available on the Actona record label. You'll often find me whinging about the fact there aren't enough women in jazz, so when this next CD fell into my lap, I was overjoyed. Drummer Terry Lynn Carrington's latest project, entitled The Mosaic, is made up of some of the finest jazz women on the planet, all coming together to celebrate their musicality. The CD comments on historical and current feminine themes, with both composed song forms and also some abstract improvising. Let's hear a track written by one of the featured guests, bassist and singer Esperanza Spalding's Crayola.
It's true, breaking up is hard to do, but it's better than sitting here with smile on you. Before you start to cry, you only cry 'cause you miss someone who puts up with you. It's true, I've invested some time on you, but your manner makes me think of it's not what I feel. So I'm gonna say goodbye. Before I start to smile, I smile 'cause I ain't gonna miss being the one who takes you. It's true. It's true. We're gonna be hard to do, but